All right, let's jump right in. We're doing a deep dive today into a really significant U.S. Supreme Court decision. It's stirring up a lot of conversation, impacting education, and touching on that fundamental line between church and state here in America. We've got a stack of sources you sent us, legal takes, opinions from all sides. Our goal to really unpack the specific Oklahoma case, understand the core legal questions, and explore what it actually means moving forward.
Absolutely. It's fascinating how this one case really brings so many core American ideas into focus, doesn't it? We're talking educational choice, religious freedom, and the constitutional limits on government funding. We'll help you navigate the complexities, understand not just the what, but the why this matters so much.
Okay, let's unpack it then. So our sources lay out this really contentious issue. Oklahoma looking at a charter school, but one planning to integrate religious teaching right into the curriculum. And that sparked a huge legal fight.
Exactly. The core legal questions were, well, can the government lawfully fund a school like that? And how does that square with the Constitution, especially the First Amendment?
Before we get too deep into the weeds of this case, maybe let's level set for everyone. What exactly is a charter school? Why is that structure important here?
Good idea. So charter schools came about, what, back in the 1990s? They're publicly funded schools, that's crucial, but they operate independently from the traditional public school system. They kind of emerged as a response to perceived issues in conventional education. The aim was innovation, flexibility, accountability, trying to improve student outcomes.
And the funding, how does that work?
Well, primarily their money comes from state and federal sources, much like regular public schools, actually. Often it's per student funding based on enrollment. This gives them, more freedom in how they spend it. But it can also mean they're competing with traditional public schools for those same dollars. Each one operates under a charter, which is basically a legal contract outlining its mission, its approach.
So, public funding, but independent operation.
Okay.
And our sources definitely point out that states regulate them differently. And yeah, the whole movement's tied up in these big debates about education reform and school choice. Right, here's where it gets really, really interesting for this specific Oklahoma case. The school wasn't just like vaguely religious, it was explicitly affiliated with a specific denomination, right?
Indeed. Its mission statement was very clear about integrating religious teachings with general education. The goal was both academic achievement and spiritual development. So the curriculum, it included things like Bible studies, ethics taught from a specific religious perspective, a whole worldview shaped by its denomination.
And that's the nub of the issue, isn't it? The appropriateness of using public funds for an institution that's so upfront about weaving religion into its daily teaching.
Precisely. It brings up that critical question: does this cross the line into establishing a religious doctrine within a publicly funded school? Does it breach that wall, the separation of church and state? Past Supreme Court cases dealing with public money for private religious schools tried to draw lines, often emphasizing that you can't really mix public funds directly with religious instruction without undermining the secular basis of public education.
Okay, so this was almost inevitable that it would end up in court and eventually the Supreme Court. What were the core arguments when it got there?
Well, on one side, you had the plaintiffs, mostly advocacy groups. They argued pretty straightforwardly that funding this kind of religious charter school violates the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment. Taxpayer money, they said, simply shouldn't be used to support religious institutions or teaching. Maintain that clear separation.
And the other side, the school supporters.
They framed it very differently. They argued that denying the funding was the problem, that it was a form of discrimination, that it infringed on religious freedoms and limited parents' ability to choose the education they want for their kids. They even pointed to other court decisions where religious organizations had received government funds for certain non-religious services or programs.
It sounds like the justices were really wrestling with this fundamental tension.
Oh, absolutely. You could see it in the questions during the proceedings. They were focused on how these First Amendment principles of the Establishment Clause, but also the Equal Protection Clause, which guarantees equal treatment, how they interact here, especially in the context of education access and religious liberty. The arguments really circled around whether public funding in this specific setup amounted to the government endorsing a particular faith.
So, after all that legal back and forth, the arguments, the deliberation, what was the final word from the Supreme Court?
The majority opinion came down pretty clearly. The court stated that funding a charter school so closely tied to and integrating teachings from a specific religious organization does violate the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment. They reaffirmed that this clause stops the government from setting up an official religion or favoring one religion over others, meaning taxpayer money can't go directly to supporting religious activities or instruction within a public school setting.
So they really drew a line in the sand there, emphasizing the need for that separation, particularly in public education.
Exactly. The reasoning was that state funding in this kind of situation could erode public trust in the secular nature of the education system, and it could lead to the government appearing to promote specific religious views with public money, which the Constitution aims to prevent. Public schools need to be neutral ground.
But it wasn't unanimous, right? There were dissenting opinions.
Yes, there were. The dissenting justices offered a different view. They highlighted the potential good that religious charter schools might do, especially in underserved communities, a different kind of educational option. They argued the ruling might actually restrict choices for parents who specifically want faith-based schooling. Their point was, essentially, if the school meets all the regular educational standards, academics, safety, etc., then its religious identity alone shouldn't block it from public funding. This tied into that whole school choice argument as well.
Okay, so the court made its decision. Beyond just Oklahoma, what are the ripple effects? What does this mean for public education, for school choice across the country?
Well, it definitely reinforces that constitutional line separation of church and state, especially when it comes to using public money for religious education. It sets a strong precedent. You're likely going to see increased scrutiny now on how states use funds within all charter school systems. It really emphasizes that public schools are meant for all students without any religious bias baked in.
And for religious groups thinking about starting charter schools, this must make things more complicated.
Oh, significantly more complicated. It might deter some efforts, frankly. The legal risks around public funding are now much clearer and perhaps higher. This decision is definitely going to shape the conversations around education reform, how we finance charter schools, all of that moving forward. And the reactions we're seeing in the sources reflect this divide. Educators concerned about public funds, celebrating the church-state separation clarity, religious groups expressing disappointment, seeing it as a limit on religious expression in education.
And policymakers are caught in the middle, it sounds like.
They really are. Divided. Some strongly back the court's decision. Others are already talking about legislative fixes, ways to maybe create pathways for similar initiatives despite the ruling, and public opinion. Just a split. It really taps into that ongoing tension in American society. How do we balance secular public education with support for faith-based options?
So this ruling sets a major precedent. Looking down the road, what's the potential future for religious charter schools now?
Well, one big thing to watch is potential legislative action. State level, maybe even federal, lawmakers might have to rethink their strategies around school choice and funding. We could see a real push to define more clearly what is permissible under this ruling, maybe trying to find loopholes or maybe trying to solidify the court's line. It could really reshape how schools are funded and structured.
And does this open the door for challenges to existing schools that might operate on a similar model?
That's a very real possibility. Legal experts, advocacy groups on both sides, they'll be watching this closely. We might see new lawsuits or new legislative battles driven by people wanting to either expand faith-based options using public funds or restrict them further based on this ruling. It certainly puts pressure on everyone involved, parents, teachers, school leaders, to push for clearer guidelines on educational choice that try to respect both religious freedom and the public interest in secular schooling.
Wow. This deep dive really underscores that the Supreme Court's decision here isn't just about one school in Oklahoma. It's a major statement in that ongoing, complex debate about public money and religious education.
It absolutely is. It highlights just how crucial maintaining that boundary between government support and religious institutions is seen by the court, at least by the majority. Making sure public resources go to secular environments that can, ideally, support diverse views and critical thinking for every student, regardless of their personal beliefs.
And it really does make us all think about the role religion should or shouldn't play in public education and what kinds of institutions get taxpayer support.
Which brings us to a final thought, maybe something for you, our listeners, to reflect on after this discussion. In a society as diverse as the U.S., how do we strike that balance? How do we honor the desire many parents have for choice in education, including faith-based options, while upholding the constitutional commitment to a secular public education system that truly serves everyone?